This is the EMDocs.net podcast with Britt Long and Manny Singh. We bring you high-yield content about what you're seeing every day in the ED. Capnography has become a staple in emergency medicine as a non-invasive measurement of carbon dioxide partial pressure. We're going to look at three common indications for capnography and several, well, let's just say different indications. First, we need to look at some background. There are two forms. There's a qualitative form with color change, basically where the color changes yellow for values over 15 millimeters of mercury. The other is a quantitative form that provides a number with a waveform. This waveform contains four phases. There's going to be a figure in the show notes with these different phases. But real quick, inspiration starts with phase zero. That's the clearing of the CO2. Exhalation begins with phase one, and this consists of the anatomical dead space. That's followed by phase two, which is a rapid rise in CO2 as the breath reaches the upper airway. Phase three of the waveform during exhalation is the alveolar plateau. This is the highest value of end tidal CO2 during the respiratory cycle. The maximum partial pressure of CO2 at end expiration is the end tidal CO2, and this normally varies anywhere between 35 to 40 millimeters of mercury. The capnogram for a patient with normal ventilation and lung function will show this rectangular waveform. There are many different factors that can affect this waveform. Those include CO2 production and transport, ventilation, and then also ventilation perfusion ratio changes. If there are issues with the ventilator, if there's a disconnection or a tube obstruction, or an issue with sampling, that can also affect capnography readings. That's enough on background. Let's get to where we can use capnography. The three common indications in the ED are first, endotracheal tube placement, second, cardiac arrest, and third, procedural sedation. Obviously, verifying tube placement is essential in the ED, but chest wall movement, breath sounds, even fogging of the tube don't have 100% sensitivity. Both qualitative and quantitative end tidal CO2 demonstrate its sensitivity approaching 100% for confirming tube placement within the trachea if the patient has normal circulation. A flat capnogram indicates misplacement in the esophagus, but this can also occur in patients with a tube obstruction, a technical malfunction of the monitor or the tubing, patients with prolonged cardiac arrest, and complete airway obstruction distal to the endotracheal tube. The second major indication is a patient with cardiac arrest. Swami covered the keys here in Quick Hits episode 45. Really, the big takeaways for capnography and cardiac arrest is that current ACLS guidelines recommend using quantitative waveform to monitor compressions and also to evaluate for return of spontaneous circulation. You're going to see a positive waveform tracing with high-quality chest compressions. A good target is a level greater than 20 millimeters of mercury, but levels less than 10 mean that you need better compressions. A sudden increase in end tidal CO2, especially with values over 20 to 30, suggests that you have ROSC. Values less than 10 at around 20 minutes suggests there's a poor likelihood of survival and also ROSC. Our third major indication is for procedural sedation. Capnography can detect hypoventilation way earlier than pulse oximetry, especially if the patient is already receiving supplemental oxygen. ACEP provides a level B recommendation stating that capnography may be used as an adjunct to detect hypoventilation, and apnea earlier than pulse oximetry or clinical assessment alone. Now, it's controversial whether capnography actually improves outcomes during sedation. But for those of you working in settings where you're the one performing the sedation and the procedure, or if there are limited resources and personnel, capnography offers that extra layer of monitoring and patient safety. Why wouldn't you want this for sedation? That's it for our more common uses. Let's get to some of those other indications. Current literature suggests that end-tidal CO2 correlates with blood pressure, lactate, and base excess in critically ill patients. There's also an association between increased mortality rates and decreased end-tidal CO2 levels. Our first relatively newer indication is for patients with metabolic acidemia. The more severe the acidemia, the lower the bicarbonate level and the end-tidal CO2 level. In patients with DKA, values less than 24 to 25 have a sensitivity over 90% and a specificity over 80% for diagnosis. If you have a level of over 35 or 36, then you can probably rule out DKA. Another indication with metabolic acidemia is sepsis. There's an inverse relationship with lactate levels and end-tidal CO2. That means that the higher the lactate level, the lower the end-tidal CO2 level. Levels less than 31 in the setting of sepsis are associated with increased mortality rates. Now, if end-tidal CO2 correlates with lactate and acidemia, could we use end-tidal CO2 in trauma patients? Current literature suggests that end-tidal CO2 values less than 30 in patients with penetrating trauma predict the risk of severe injury and the need for blood products. Levels less than 25 are associated with decreased cardiac output and increased mortality. When we look at the data for severe head trauma, elevated CO2 levels are associated with increased cerebral blood flow and also ICP. That can potentially worsen patient outcomes. The next indication is in patients with obstructive airway disease like asthma or COPD. If there's a patient and they have a severe exacerbation, you can see a shark fin appearance of the waveform with a steep phase 3 because of the severe bronchospasm and the obstruction. Early on in the exacerbation, tachypnea might result in a decreased end-tidal CO2 value. As that exacerbation worsens and the patient starts to become hypercarbic and respiratory acidemia sets in, then you'll start to see elevated end-tidal CO2 levels. Let's get to our last two potential uses here, and that's fluid responsiveness and pulmonary embolism. If you give a patient some IV fluids and you see a 5% increase in end-tidal CO2 levels, that means they're probably fluid responsive. PE increases the alveolar dead space, it lowers expired CO2, and it increases the partial pressure of CO2 and the end-tidal CO2 gradient. You might see this as a flattened phase 3. There are studies looking at actually combining capnography with the well score, but right now, this isn't quite ready for prime time. So, with all of that, where does this leave us for capnography? End-tidal CO2 is reliable in confirming endotracheal tube placement, evaluating chest compression quality, and looking for ROSC, and finally, monitoring for hypoventilation during procedural sedation. Current literature also suggests that it correlates with metabolic acidemia and lactate. As the acidemia worsens and that lactate increases, end-tidal CO2 decreases. This might be helpful in DKA and sepsis. It may also be useful in trauma, obstructive lung disease, fluid responsiveness, even PE. Just remember, end-tidal CO2 does have many potential uses for us, but it should only be used as a supplement to your amazing decision-making at the bedside. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. Stay safe and healthy, everyone.